Hello, this is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 23, and today we'll be talking about some of the issues that parents of kids with special needs have to deal with. Last week I received an email from a listener, which I was very happy to find in my inbox. The email was from a mother of at least one child with special needs. I won't share her specific story for privacy reasons. However, her email did remind me of the many stories I've heard parents tell me over the years about struggles they have faced in having a child with special needs. The difficulties I'm talking about in these cases are not related to dealing with their child. What I'm referring to here are the struggles that parents face in society and life in general around them. Sometimes parents don't even know their child has a special need at first. This happens quite a lot in parents of kids with sensory processing issues or sensory processing disorder. This is one reason why we really need to spread the word to as many people as possible. You never know when you're going to run into someone that might be looking for some answers to what is going on with their child. Maybe you can be there to let them know about sensory processing. You can point them to this podcast and have them listen to my shows on sensory processing as well. And speaking of spreading the word about this podcast, you can now follow the Milestones Podcast on Instagram. I just recently got this set up, so there's not much on it yet, but I'm working on that. I am new to Instagram, so if anyone has any advice for me on posting things, please let me know. I'm trying to get it connected to my Midwest Therapy Facebook page, so bear with me. It may not be a smooth setup in the beginning. My username on Instagram for the podcast is Milestones Podcast, all one word, all together. If you're on Instagram, find me on there and follow me so that I know if it's working. I have heard stories time and time again from parents who know that something is going on with their child, but no one seems to listen to their concerns and they have no idea what to do. Sometimes people think they're crazy because no one else can see what they're seeing in their own child. So frustrating. You can bring your concerns up to your child's pediatrician at well check appointments, but they will often either dismiss it or not recognize that what you're talking about is actually describing sensory processing issues. There are some wonderful pediatricians out there, but not all of them are aware of sensory processing. And even if they've heard of the term, they don't necessarily know how to recognize when your child might be having some issues with this. Pediatricians and other doctors are obviously very smart. They wouldn't be doctors if they weren't. But they are not necessarily trained in sensory processing. This is really an area more specialized to occupational therapists. Many pediatricians have even been cautioned by their own sources of information about suggesting sensory processing disorder as its own diagnosis. I will get into that topic more later in the show. Those doctors who don't recognize the symptoms will often seem to ignore you. But it might just be that they don't understand it either, so they don't know what to tell you to do. Although, in a sense, they are ignoring you rather than helping you explore other possible options. For example, maybe suggesting that you seek an evaluation from a developmental pediatrician, or better yet, suggest a place in your area that provides a team developmental evaluation. Many children's hospitals have teams set up for this exact reason. It can be a maddening experience for parents who are desperate to find answers to why their child does certain things that they're doing. If you aren't familiar with the term sensory processing, how would you know how to search for it? This is especially difficult for those parents who have children with sensory processing disorder without having any other diagnoses or conditions. If a child has a diagnosis which gets them started in early intervention services due to developmental or physical delays, for example, they are much more likely to get answers to the questions that revolve around the sensory stuff much more early and more easily. Hopefully, their early intervention therapist will help them identify potential sensory processing issues and point them in the right direction to get started working on those issues. However, when there are no significant developmental or physical delays, but your child is having trouble with processing sensory information, this becomes confusing for parents and many pediatricians as well. It might seem that if there are no developmental delays, then there are no real issues to deal with. However, if you have a child who is getting by enough to function and learn and keep up with other kids their same age, then how can we pinpoint a problem? What if you have a 4-year-old child who falls down a lot and seems to be very clumsy? They trip over seemingly nothing and fall flat on the floor, or seem to always be running into walls or doorways. They have constant bruises on their knees, their legs, their arms, and possibly their head from falling down so much. But it must not be a real problem because they don't even seem to notice or get hurt from all this bumping around and falling down, right? You may have some relatives, possibly your own parents, who write it off as nothing. Oh, that's just a boy thing. Boys are always so rough and tumble, which of course makes it more difficult to explain when this is going on with a girl. Well, they're just goofing off or being silly, maybe. They'll outgrow it eventually. They're just clumsy, not paying attention or something. You were exactly the same way when you were their age. Or they're just getting so tall so fast they haven't grown into their legs yet. I've probably heard all of the excuses or explanations from people who have either never heard of sensory processing, or have heard of it but don't understand it, or have heard of it but don't understand it, and think it's some kind of made-up thing. It's not real. Well, I'm here to tell you that it is real. If you know of a child who consistently does things that are puzzling to you, but they don't have any diagnosed explanations, you might want to consider looking more into the sensory stuff, just in case. For those of you who have been listening to my show for a while, or have listened to the beginning episodes, you probably have a pretty good basic understanding of sensory processing by now. At least I hope so. I know that the information provided in this show can be a little higher technical level than some of the other podcasts that are out there, but I know that my listeners can handle it. If you're a new listener to the show, make sure you go back after this episode and listen to episode 1, where I get into the beginning discussions of what sensory processing is. There are still people, even doctors out there, that will debate whether or not sensory processing disorder is real. They might point out that the diagnosis of sensory processing disorder, or SPD, was submitted to the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, what we call it the DSM for short, and was up for review in 2013. But it was not added to the manual at that time. They denied it because of insufficient evidence. You could say that the occupational therapy community fell behind in gathering enough scientific data and research on sensory processing in the past. However, there are many places out there that have been collecting data and continue to put together studies on sensory processing disorder. So hopefully in the next revision, we will have the adequate evidence to add it as a standalone diagnosis. This doesn't mean that there aren't studies already out there that show evidence of sensory processing and evidence-based treatments for certain types of SPD, because those are out there. It just wasn't enough to get recognized officially by the medical community at large. Until it has been added to the DSM, we will continue to struggle to get all pediatricians on board with sensory processing and to recognize it as a real thing. Even if a pediatrician doesn't want to recognize this sensory processing as a real thing, they should still listen to parents who bring up concerns about their children. They can make referrals on to developmental pediatricians or other services to give parents at least something to go on, something to validate their concerns. See the link in today's show notes on this statement by the American Academy of Pediatrics from 2012. It's pretty interesting. This just reminds me, and should remind you, that we need to come together as a community of like-minded people and support each other and people around us that might be struggling with this. I find this particular topic very difficult because, as an occupational therapist who works hand-in-hand with parents of kids with special needs, I wish I could be there to support them in these situations. Unfortunately, I usually don't meet them until after they've been through the stress and anxiety of many years of trying to figure out what's going on and how to help their child. By the time I meet them, they have finally somehow found their way to an explanation of sensory processing. At that point, we're just ready to get going with strategies to help their child, and more in-depth discussions about why and what is going on with them from a processing standpoint. Okay, well now I'd like to go back and talk about the research study that I found for today. I skipped past it in the beginning of the show because I wanted to get right into the topic. But I found this study that is from 2007 that does show how kids with sensory processing disorders can benefit from occupational therapy and sensory diets or sensory interventions. A sensory diet is a term that we use for a plan that is specific to each child with sensory processing issues. The OT looks at each child's sensory needs and determines which type of activities they would probably benefit from the best on a daily basis. The activities are lined out for the family to use every day at home with their child. The idea with the sensory diet is that over time, they will need to do these activities less and less often. Examples of activities for a sensory diet could be things like jumping on a trampoline, swinging, wheelbarrow walking, rolling them up in a blanket like a burrito, chewing gum, and so on. These activities are specific to each child based on things their body needs in order to feel calm or to be stimulated depending on the situation. The study also used therapeutic listening as a treatment. This is where children listen to modified CDs that use high and low frequencies of music at different intervals that create a disruption in the sound of the music. The idea is to exercise the muscles of the middle ear to help process the information or the music coming through the headphones. The study is called, the study that I found today is called The Effect of Sound-Based Intervention on Children with Sensory Processing Disorders and Visual Motor Delays. It was printed in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy. The researchers were two occupational therapists from Columbus, Ohio, in the United States. You can find a link to the full article of the research study in my show notes for today. The purpose of the study was to see if a therapeutic listening home program combined with a sensory diet would be effective in treating kids with sensory processing disorder and visual motor delays. The study included 10 kids between the ages of 5 and 11 years who were receiving occupational therapy at an outpatient clinic that was associated with the children's hospital in that area. All of the children had moderate to severe sensory processing disorder and visual motor integration delays. Children were excluded from the study if they had moderate to severe mental retardation, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, visual impairment, hearing impairment, or severe autism. However, children with or without the following diagnoses were allowed into the study: ADHD, sensory integration disorder, mild autism, or pervasive developmental disorder, Asperger syndrome, developmental delay, coordination disorder, or motor delays. The article doesn't actually say how many, if any, of the kids had these diagnoses that I just listed. The study included each of the 10 participants receiving 4 weeks of a traditional sensory diet, then receiving 8 weeks of a therapeutic listening program combined with the sensory diet. The families were given strategies and activities based on each child's individual sensory needs to do at home for their sensory diet. After the first 4 weeks, they were also given a therapeutic listening program specific to each child's needs. The program consisted of listening to specific CDs 2 times a day for 20 to 30 minutes each time. The parents were asked to keep logs of their listening times and record their child's response to the music each time they listened. The parents were also asked to document their use of the sensory diet and any changes in their child's target behaviors, such as things like increased eye contact and reduced outbursts, or whatever it was they were working on. Here are some of the things the parents reported after completing the program. 4 out of the 5 kids who had auditory hypersensitivity were more tolerant of noises. 4 of the participants had been having daily tantrums before the treatment, and these had either stopped or had been reduced significantly by the end of the study. 5 out of 6 kids who were reported to be high energy before the study were more calm during the therapeutic listening program. 3 of the parents reported that their children's eye contact improved. Overall, the results did indicate that a sensory diet combined with a therapeutic listening program does show a substantial improvement in elementary school age children's behaviors that are associated with sensory processing disorders. The study also indicated that the participants' handwriting improved over the course of the study. The study suggested that the therapeutic listening program improve the kids' visual perception, which was measured by their handwriting skills. This is just one study out of so many out there that are beginning to show scientific evidence to back up the effectiveness of occupational therapy with kids who have sensory processing issues. That's all I have for today. Again, don't forget to follow me on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening.